We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Welcome to this week's episode of Who's Counting, the podcast about all things related to elections, election integrity, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they're not run in the way they're supposed to be. And we're going to talk about what citizens can do to make sure that our elections are carried out in accordance with the law. And we're very fortunate today to have with us Linda Sinkowitz, who is a citizen of Connecticut, who started a project a few years ago called Fight Voter Fraud. And she's going to tell you amazing things about what she's doing. And I want you to listen carefully because it just shows what you can do if you are committed to protecting the elections in our country. So Linda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me here.
We are actually on location in Arizona, and we are getting ready to start the Arizona Statewide Election Integrity Summit that CPI is hosting. And we're very excited, looking forward to it. Linda is one of our speakers who's going to talk about cleaning voter rolls. So we're going to bring you some photos and some interviews and some snippets of our Arizona Election Integrity Summit. So, Linda, you have come from icy cold to snowy Connecticut to warmer. It's not hot yet here, but it's warmer than...
But there's no snow.
There's no snow.
No snow, so that's the best part.
So, Linda, first of all, introduce yourself to our audience. Tell people who you are and a little bit about your background before we get started into the substance of what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, well, I never thought in my wildest dreams I would be having a nonprofit, a 501c4, called Fight Voter Fraud, Inc. It started when I was running for state rep in Middletown, Connecticut. In 2014, I was wet behind the ears, noticed some things that just didn't seem right. 2016, I started noticing more stuff. For instance, I would be sending out my information to newly registered voters. We'd get the list once a week. 10 days later, it'd come back. They don't live there. They don't live there. By the hundreds. It was unbelievable.
These were new registrants.
Newly registered voters. So it wasn't until just before 2018 that I figured out what was going on. And most of it was through the absentee ballots, specifically the absentee ballot request forms, where people sign saying that under penalty of a Class D felony, that yes, all the information I'm providing is correct. And I started checking into them before the election. And I believe it was out of 634, 410, I believed, were either invalid or illegal.
Wow.
So I
started... How did you come to realize that to think that they were invalid or illegal?
Because some of them had the signature of the same person who was going out collecting them.
Oh.
I mean, the handwriting was the same. In Connecticut, you can only write in the small box from the town clerk's office. And there was three and four different pens that were used. Stuff was filled in. Stuff was left blank. So I had about 100 hours. Now, this is also during my campaigning.
Right.
Pulling this together, we had about 6 inches of what I believed to be hard evidence. So I reached out to the chief state's attorney's office, and they told me, we don't have the resources.
To investigate.
Right.
So anything related to voting.
Nope. So they told me to go to the... SEEC in Connecticut, which is the State Election Enforcement, which I'd already filed multiple complaints of other stuff. My husband keeps saying, stop saying they're useless, but they're useless. So it was a federal election, which is every 2 years. So I reached out to the FBI. They agreed to meet with me. 8 days before the election, I'm supposed to meet with them at 12 noon. I get a phone call at 7 in the morning. We can't meet with you. And I said, do we need to change the time, the location? And they said, no, it'll just look like we're interfering with an election.
And this is 2018.
This is 2018.
Okay.
So now, where do you go? What do you do? Nobody wants to help. Everybody turns a blind eye to it. So I figured, well, I guess I'm going to have to do something. So once I got over the anger, because when you know that you are going to lose because you've got hundreds of people who don't live in your town, and you know of other people that had been voting that don't live there. So I came up with the idea of Fight Voter Fraud. And the funny thing was, originally my logo was a fist. We tailored it back to the magnifying glass. And the first few things we ended up doing were some smaller lawsuits. And we had a federal lawsuit. And it wasn't until November of 2020 that we changed our focus, which is one of the things that we're going to end up talking about. So that's how it started, just being frustrated with knowing something's wrong and nobody wants to help.
So 2014, 2016, 2018, mm-hmm. you went through and you knew that there were illegal votes, illegal registrations, something was funky, something was wrong in your town.
Well, especially since in Middlesex County, supposedly had 116% of the voters voting.
You're right.
It's right. Like, wait a minute, these numbers don't match.
No, that's just impossible.
You know,
that's
and impossible. Overall, statewide, I believe it was like 94%, which is impossible.
That's right.
Absolutely impossible.
Right. So in November of 2020, so tell us how things changed in your world vision and in your organization.
Well, I was mostly focused on Connecticut because that's where I grew up, that's where I live, that's where I want to stay and actually have one vote for one legal voter. One of the things we had done was we put together, it's called Report It. It's an app on your phone that if you see what you believe to be potential voter fraud, you can just get on the app, type in voter fraud, and it comes directly to us. You can send videos, you can send pictures, et cetera.
Well, let me ask you before you go on. So what do you tell people to look for? How do you identify voter fraud? If somebody sees it and you tell them, if you see something, say something, what are you looking for?
It could be anything from when you go to vote and they tell you you already voted.
We heard that so many times in 2020.
You know, or if you see your ballot being put in a separate box somewhere, or if you know your neighbor or you got an absentee ballot in the mail for your neighbor and your neighbor doesn't live there anymore, or for someone who used to live where you lived. There's all different types. And we have to actually say potential voter fraud because I'm not law enforcement.
Right, right.
So it's any types of things that you see that you don't think is right.
And so when you first set this up, it was in Connecticut.
Right. We geofenced Connecticut, which...
Okay, now you're going to have to tell me, what is geofencing? That sounds like a big fancy term. And I can barely work my iPhone.
So I know, myself too. So what geofencing is that the app itself would only work in Connecticut for the parameters. So I wouldn't be getting ones from other states. Easier said than done, because when we directed people to go to our website, mm-hmm. it can come from all over the country, if not world.
So, okay, you would say to people, go to our website, and if you see something, you can report it there.
Yep, you can do it there through the Report It app.
Okay, so this is the Report It app. It says, report voter fraud. Say something if you see something. And this is on your website.
That's on our website.
And your website is... FightVoterFraud.org.
Correct.
FightVoterFraud.org is the website. And so you put this on your website, and then all of a sudden you start getting things from all over the country.
All over the country.
But what is geofencing?
Geofencing means it on your cell phone, it could only be used within the certain parameters of the state. So we originally set up just Connecticut. We now have 10 states, including Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, North Carolina,
but what is that? I still don't understand. What does that mean? You got to understand. You got to have to understand.
In
you're
order,
talking to a complete ninny okay. when it comes
in
to...
In order for you to use the app
okay.
on your phone...
Oh, you have to basically enable it to work where I am.
Correct.
And when you say that's what geofencing is...
That's what geofencing
you
is.
Enable my phone to be able to use the app if I'm in a state where you said, okay, we're turning on
Georgia, returning right. on North Carolina. Yeah. Okay, got it. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. But you can be anonymous. You can send videos. You can send pictures. You can give us your phone number or your email, because I can actually interact with everybody. Again, I can send an email back to you, even if you're anonymous, if I need further information.
Right.
So that's how we expanded with our Report It. And it wound up being that a lot of the affidavits that were signed started with our organization's Report It, because we turned it over to different people who would then follow up for us with the investigation.
Well, I'm surprised the Justice Department and the J6 Committee haven't come after you. Well, we will try not to air this until after they're finished. No, seriously, because they hate the fact that we're actually producing information. They just hate that.
So that was one part of it. The other part of what we're doing, and what I'm very excited about, is we decided to form a silent army of volunteers, because I figured out how we can actually prove person by person the potential voter fraud.
Okay, and how is that?
We research individuals that we believe, and there's a certain method that I use in looking at absentee ballot request forms or even just the reports on who potentially could be someone who is not living in that town or Connecticut or that state anymore and is moved elsewhere.
And how do you know that?
Because we research, there's so much public information out there.
Okay.
We research their address. We go and check to see if they voted in Connecticut, because it's public information. We then check the forwarding address the same way. And we also check in that state whether they were registered to vote.
In the second state. So do you use national change of address data from the postal authority?
We're actually using that now. We had other ways that we were finding the information. And then we use social media.
Yeah.
Because where was the person working? Now, an example would be someone in a small town in Connecticut that sold their home in 2017, mm-hmm. had their absentee forwarded to Pennsylvania. The person was registered to vote in Pennsylvania, voted absentee in Connecticut, and he works at an aerospace company in Pittsburgh for the last 4 years.
Did he vote in Pennsylvania?
We haven't checked that part. That's our final step to go and check on that one.
Because that's illegal.
Yes. Yes. So we're delving into not only those, but I also formed what's called an OBIT committee. Because we know Connecticut had over 12,000 deceased on the voter rolls as of December of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a special way where are able to pull out the names. And by 12 people at a time, I have my OBIT committee. We get their obituary. We do the background again, where they lived, because we want to see if it was a convalescent home.
Mm-hmm.
We already know whether or not they voted,
mm-hmm.
whether in 2020 or even before. So we can tell if they voted after they were deceased.
Mm-hmm.
We can tell whether they're considered active voters, inactive. And the most amazing thing are the ones that voted in person years after they died.
Oh, my God.
And we are, you know, we have 100% proof on those. So,
and who do you turn those over to?
Specifically right now with the OBITs, in Connecticut, it's the Registrar of Voters who need to remove them from the list. So we have all the information. We just started delivering the information to the registrars in binders, in page protectors, with 100% of the evidence that we have, a listing, and a letter, which we also get notarized once we hand it over to them, which we let them know there's probably going to be more, because we didn't do it town by town. There's a specific
right.
way. And if they were one of the lucky ones to have someone who voted, at the same time, we are delivering a letter to the town attorney demanding an investigation into why, you know, Mrs. King, who died in 2012, voted in the 2020 election.
Wow.
So what we're here to do now is that we are expanding our training to other states.
So what sort of training are you doing? What are you training people to do?
To do exactly what we have been doing in Connecticut for all the research. We have a certain process that we're using, and we're not law enforcement. But every bit of information that we're pulling together is admissible in court. We even do a summary sheet, including in Connecticut, the 2 federal laws and 5 state laws that may or may not have been violated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then we'll be the ones that were double voters, obviously, they go to the feds, and the others go to the state. And we want to be able to do the same thing in other states.
Mm-hmm. So you're training citizens. That's what you're talking about, your silent army.
Yes, because they sign confidentiality and membership agreements. They can't talk about what they're doing. Because you know how excited someone gets when they find a producer at CNN we right. can prove? They want to put it on the internet.
Well, yeah, and then what CNN does is then they come in and they talk to somebody who says, oh, this is all poppycock, and they just debunk it before you ever have a chance. That's what they did to the people, the citizens in Florida.
Right, so we're keeping very quiet with all the information that we do have. And when we turn it over to law enforcement, we are going to give the exact information to the registrar of voters. So they have it, and it is their job to remove the people from the voter rolls. We will also be having that notarized as well, that we have given them the information, because if they don't follow through, then there's other repercussions that can happen mm-hmm. with this. We're not going to be putting the names of people on our website.
That's good. You shouldn't do that.
So what we're going to be doing is, and we're rebuilding our website right now, is you're going to be able to click on Arizona, and then whether yours is done by county or by town, we'll figure all that stuff out. You click on the town, and you'll be able to tell how many people who died were active voters, how many were inactive, how many voted. Mm-hmm. So we're just doing numbers, and it's going to be a living document because we're going to be adding stuff. Once a week, we're going to be doing an update with all of this.
And so right now you're just focused on dead people voting?
No.
Okay, so what are the categories?
Other categories would be people voting in towns they don't live in anymore.
And so people who move and just keep voting where they used to live?
Correct.
In Georgia, I was involved with the president's post-election contest that we filed challenging the Georgia results. And there is a law in Georgia that if you move away from Georgia and you register to vote in another state, that is considered a cancellation of your residency in Georgia. And you are not legally supposed to be able to vote again in Georgia unless you re-register. I don't know how many other states have that, but it seems to me a pretty good, because residency is always a matter of intent. But if you have people who are living in other states, do you check to see whether they vote in the other state?
Yes. With the ones that we have the information on right now, and the ones that we don't, they're in the queue.
Okay.
You know, we are going to make sure we are 100% accurate with all of this, because you can only be registered in one location.
Right.
And don't think that Connecticut would actually cancel out any voter registration. I mean, Connecticut, as of 2016, had 17,000 ghost voters.
What is a ghost voter?
A ghost voter is someone who is registered to vote that doesn't exist.
Oh, my gosh. How do you find that out?
Well, it was done through different numbers, and I'm trying to think of Judicial Watch had done a study on it, and my former board chair had taken the numbers himself, and he had done the calculations, and he came out with the same amount.
But someone who's registered to vote who doesn't exist.
Correct. It could be someone who just decided to register a person, pretend to be somebody else, just to be able to have another name on the list.
And is a way that you find that looking at things like commercial data, a commercial database or something like that, they don't have a social security number, they have no profile in any other database. Is that what you're looking for?
Right. And we don't have access to social security numbers.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's not something we look at. And the other part of what we don't look at is the party affiliation.
Right. Because we don't care.
We don't care.
We don't care.
We just want one vote for one legal voter. I don't want
who
my
who actually exists. Someone who actually exists.
Correct.
And is alive. And is alive.
Correct. Correct.
You're such a radical.
I know. So we're here in Arizona, and we're going to be in the other states getting people to join our silent army. We have a process we've put together. Mm-hmm. So you can actually be researching in your own state and helping your own local community. But can't tell anybody.
So talk about, one of the things you told me about were the votes that were cast from the hospital for the criminally insane in Connecticut. I love this story. Tell everybody about that.
Right. So in Connecticut, you have to be mentally competent to vote.
There's a shock. Wonder if you should be mentally competent to hold the office of president. Oh, excuse me.
There should be some parameters that should be used for that. But in Connecticut, there's conflicting state statutes. So the only way someone can be removed from being a voter is having a probate judge declare them not eligible for mental competency. But in Middletown, Connecticut, there is Whiting Forensic. It's
That's
for the criminally insane. We're talking murderers, rapists. You know,
but you're not deemed competent to stand trial.
Correct. And a judge has put them there.
Right.
And we had 57 that voted in Middletown. One even it filled out his absentee ballot request form in crayon. Mm-hmm. So there's another state statute that says 7 days before an election, the registrars have to send a letter to the conservators to let them know either they're going to be in there registering them to vote or to whoever the designee is that they have, which isn't being done. But if you've got a conservator and you're in one of those institutions, it's because you're not mentally competent. And a judge has already determined that.
So why are we sending letters saying they're going to vote?
Right. And between not only those locations, but we had a 95-year-old woman in an Alzheimer location in Torrington, Connecticut, that registered and voted for the first time. It's abuse of the elderly that is going on. So we need to be looking into that as well. I'm sure it's happening in other states.
Well, it is. And, you know, the American Constitutional Rights Union has a project called Protect Elderly Votes. And they'll be with us at our summits. And they have a whole set of letters and a protocol for people who can get involved and get the letters that pertain to the statutes in their state protecting elderly voters. Okay. And we need to really pay attention to that, particularly as we see the Biden administration using our federal agencies to register millions of people just when they go in to see a doctor using Medicare.
Well, in Connecticut right now, last week, they proposed the bill that they proposed last year, which was to have the housing authority register people to vote, then send it to motor vehicle department, who would then send it to the registrars. And as my counterpart at the time had said, why don't you have the sewer department doing it too? It's not their job.
Well, that is what the Biden administration ordered a year ago for every federal agency to develop a voter registration plan and submit that back to the White House to Susan Rice. She's not political at all, of course.
Of course.
And they're supposed to say here how we're going to use our agency to register people to vote. And so they just did a report a year after year of this plan. And you have these left-wing groups that published. I mean, we've done FOIA requests to try to get copies of the plans that were supposed to be submitted last September. We've gotten nothing back. So, but these left-wing groups are talking about all the things they're doing to help agencies register people to vote. So it's a real challenge. But so you're going to be working in other states, and if people want to reach you and your project, they just go to fightvoterfraud.org.
Or they can also email me at Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at fightvoterfraud.org, and we'll get you set up.
Well, we need to have an army, a silent army of people all over the place doing what you're doing, and you're training them, and that's wonderful, and we're going to need a lot more resources, because I think we're going to have a lot more people reporting things.
I certainly hope so.
And then we have to figure out what to do with all of those reports.
We have a plan.
Oh, well, that's...
We have a plan.
What is that plan? You can't tell us.
I cannot tell you right now.
Okay, that's okay. All right, we just want to report it. So fightvoterfraud.org.
That's it.
Well, Linda, you are a true American heroine, and it's important for people to know what they can do and not just be upset about what's happening and what's happened in the past, but I'm just a firm believer that it's people like you all over the country who are going to save our elections. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting.
The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter. Become part of the Election Integrity Network.